We've got Ted Vanson in the house as we talk about his work, flashlight recorder and comfortable shoes, a simple guide to paranormal investigation. And we're going to be back and talk with him more about that and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, our final hour here. Ted Vanson with us as we talk about paranormal investigating. And do you find, Ted, that there are some regions of the country that are better places to go to investigate the paranormal?
Well, I think it starts with some of the most historical places.
Like Gettysburg, places like that?
Yeah, where there was traumatic events and so on and so forth, yeah.
When you started doing this, back around, what, 87?
Right.
Have you seen a change now that it's 2018 in terms of how people investigate these things?
Well, yeah, definitely. One is the advancements of the tools, so it's become somewhat of a fad. And the second, it's wider. It's a little more accepted than before. So we're out there. There's more groups, more teams, more people involved. So there is a big change from late 80s, early 90s to today, definitely.
Yeah, you would think that most people have accepted this as a reality, that it happens, and they don't laugh at it as, like they used to.
Right, and you don't get as much ridicule. I mean, when I was doing this, like in right out of high school, if you told somebody, hey, I'm going to go check out a haunted house, or, I'm doing research on this, people would kind of look down at you and say, oh, you're going to burn, in hell and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's definitely changed. The whole attitude is different.
What do you think of exorcisms?
Yeah, I'm still a skeptic on a lot of this stuff.
You are? Okay.
I have to. And, I don't know if that exists. I mean, you have to think of, now, some of these countries and areas of the world that don't really have the technology, that we have for scanning, like brain activity and so on and so forth. Psychology says that most of that stuff could be schizophrenia or some other mental disease. But these countries or these areas of the world that deal with it in their own religious ways. Well, some African countries used to, they had a witch doctor, they did all this stuff, to try to get the evil spirit out and so on and so forth. Even the Catholic Church had their own exorcisms and stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I've never seen one. I've never been involved with one. And I'm one of those people that I really need to experience it and get what I can out of it before I say, hey, I believe it,
Okay, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Yeah, hello. Hello?
Hey, Joe.
Yeah, I was going to ask Ted, about angels. You've interviewed people, I guess, that claim encounters with angels. Okay, say people that were lost on a hike or in another country on the road and they claim they got directions from an angel. Do these people expect this to happen again or additional help along the same lines? And then I'd ask you about also, Ted, the Blair Witch Project. What'd you think of that movie? It did excite a lot of people. Then also, if we found Bigfoot or the unicorns, which I think actually might be out there, would it be like a niche audience about this happening, or would it get like national play and get all over the world and on TV?
Well, I'll try and answer them all. I think angels, I think everybody experiences that when there's, let's use your, situation, like they lost out in the woods or on the side of the road and an angel appears and tells them how to get home or so on and so forth. I've interviewed people that have had certain circumstances like that happen, and they truly believe it. So, I mean, who am I to tell them that they didn't experience it and, it wasn't real? I mean, I'm not an expert. There's no experts in this field out there. We all are in the same boat trying to discover this and get the research done. But I think if someone believes it enough, then it truly happened for them. And I think that's good for them. As in Bigfoot, I don't know if we'll ever find Bigfoot. I've become a, I'm actually a part of a Bigfoot organization, and I know there's stuff out there. There's probably a million footprints by now that's been casted, and you know, hair samples that they done DNA testing on that they have no idea what it is. I don't know if we'll find out about Bigfoot in our lifetime either. And what was the other question?
Blair Witch Project.
I watched the movie three times, and I thought it was a great film. I think the college students that created the film did a great job, especially on the cameras that they were using. There wasn't any real truth to the story, as far as I know. I know there was a backline of it, of another story that was similar to it, but I thought it was a great film.
Low budget, too.
Yeah, it was very low budget, and it was an amazing film for what they did. And their acting was great, too, considering.
What are the demographics for ghost hunting and paranormal investigating in terms of age brackets?
Well, that's kind of tough because age brackets, we've got students that are 18, 19, that are coming into it because of the TV programs or experiences, and then we have people that are right up to 65, 70. So I don't think there's a limitation on age, and I don't, you know, I think pretty much it's up to the individual. I would probably say, I'd even go as far to say this, George, is that out of 10 people, there's probably one or two that wants to actually delve into this as much as probably the next.
Let's go to Andy in Torrance, California. Hey, Andy, go ahead.
Hey, George. Great show as usual.
Thank you, sir.
This story goes back to the very early 70s, like 71, 72. I was just out of the Army. My uncle, who was taking care of all my grandmother's property, he had just passed away. And it was the last 12 months of my grandmother's life. She was like 87 years old, living in a very old house in Chicago. And she was a rich old lady, and everyone in the family would volunteer one day of the week to stay with her. So I volunteered one day to take her to church, and then my aunt would relieve me. And so I stayed overnight, and my uncle was like a dad to me and my brother, and he took us everywhere, loved us, gave us whatever we wanted. So when he died, I had deep emotion, and I want you to remember that very deep emotion tied to him and that house that he lived in with my grandmother. So when I stayed at that house, I stayed in my uncle's room, in his bed, and go to sleep, and I said a little prayer, and with very deep emotion from the bottom of my heart, I said, "Uncle," I said, "I miss you very, very much." He had been dead about 6 months. And I said, "I miss you from the bottom of my heart. I love you very, very much. And I hope you're with God. And I want you to know I would do anything to have you back again. I miss you." I was, you know, kind of heartbroken. So, okay, so I'm drifting off to sleep. And then suddenly the room lights up like the sun radiating in the room, and I hear the sound of what sounded to me like keys or like the sound of chimes. And I said, "Oh my God," I said, you know, I said, "this has got to be a bad dream." I was terrorized. I was absolutely shaken. So I closed my eyes and covered my head up like a scared chicken, which I was. And then finally, the brightness just permeated the cover over my head. So I pulled the cover off, and the next thing you know, I see a little piece of paper drifting downward, and it was like a cloud opening up, like another dimension opening up. And when I saw that piece of paper falling down, drifting, I said, "I know this is not a dream." I jumped out of my bed, ran to the next room, turned on the lights, and I yelled out, "Wow!" I was absolutely flabbergasted. Anyway, my grandmother comes in with her cane, and she says, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" I said, "Grandma, I just had a dream. You won't believe it. I had a dream." I didn't tell her what it was, by the way. So anyway, go back to the next room, the bedroom, and on the floor is a piece of paper with doodling. My uncle was always doodling, you know, scribbling on paper, right? And so I showed the paper to my aunt who relieved me in the morning. I said, does this writing look familiar to you? And she said, "That looks like Uncle John's handwriting." And so when you have deep, deep emotion tied to a very, very strong wish, you might be surprised what window you might be opening up into the next dimension. That's my story.
That's a good point, too. I mean, you never know what you're going to open up. What do you think of Ouija boards, Ted?
They're a tool. They're a game. I think that there's been a lot of misconceptions about those things, and I own 9 or 10 of them.
You do?
I have a friend that owns probably 30, 40 of them. Yeah, it's
what do you do with 30 or 40 Ouija boards?
I don't know what he does with his. Mine, they sit in a closet. You know, they were just given to me. People give them to me because they didn't want them in their house or so on and so forth.
Right, I can understand that.
You know, they gave them to me, but I'm not a believer in it. Like I said, I'm a skeptic, so stuff like that I have, it doesn't bother me, and I've never, knock on wood, I've never had any incident or problems.
Let's go to Woody in Albany, New York, wildcard line. Hi, Woody, go ahead.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I would like to ask Mr. Vanson if he's familiar with the movie Three Men and a Baby.
I remember seeing it. I don't know how much I remember.
You're going to talk about the ghost in the window, aren't you?
Well, I would certainly like to know his opinion of it if he knew about that, because on the VHS copy,
it was weird.
Yeah, and a little frightening. But on the DVD copy, it looks like the studio took out the original scene and put this other thing in that would back up their story that it wasn't really a ghost after all. And I wonder, if that's the case, what does the studio even get out of doing that? What was, does that help circulation and attendance to the movie or what?
You think sometimes it would. Were you familiar with that story, Ted?
Yeah, I am. It's sort of like along the lines of the story with The Wizard of Oz. There was a scene also in there. I think in some cases, when a studio gets enough complaints about, you know, something like that being seen, they do take it out. I also think that they have film and they have stuff that they're hiding that has stuff, you know, that they don't want us to see that they've collected over the years too, because, you know, when we investigate with cameras and stuff, we constantly catch things, and we don't necessarily know what they are, but we do catch them, and they certainly can look like a figure. They certainly can look like an apparition or a part of a body, and we still don't know. I think the studio, if they leave it in, you know, people start talking about it, sure, they could gain some extra money out of the sales of the movie, but I think on the other side of it, they do take it out. You know, they don't want people complaining. They don't want, they probably get stuff from religious people that complain and so on and so forth. I think it's a toss-up. There's a lot of stuff there.
They don't want the controversy, too.
Right, right. They want to make money, so if the controversy is there, they're not gonna make the money on the sale of the movie.
Good marketing guy though would have kept it in and would have been promoting it, saying, "You got to look at this scene, folks. When you're at the movies, what is that?"
Yeah, exactly.
First time caller, Dave in Greensboro, Indiana. Welcome to the program. Hey, David, thanks for calling.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Great, Dave. Thank you.
Hey. Wanted to talk to you about where I live. My wife and I bought the house I grew up in. We bought it from my dad probably 15 years ago, and the house has got kind of a history to it. Supposedly, during the 1920s and 30s, the couple that owned the house had lost everything in the Depression. They had a house in town. They were fairly well-to-do. And they lost the house and had to move out here. And the lady of the house, her name was Grace, she suffered from depression, and she crossed herself over in the bathroom. And when we bought the house, I really was curious, because supposedly her husband had died out here too. And that was after Grace had taken her life. And my wife and I went to the library, and we searched the old newspapers and even went to the Board of Health and got death certificates. And sure enough, Grace had taken her life. And the articles talked about how well-respected she was in the community and everything. But when I was a kid, anytime there was like a strange noise or something would get moved, my sisters would say, well, that's Grace doing that. I, you know, that's kind of why we wanted to check it out. And like, I was always skeptical. My wife says she's a sensitive, and she said that she had felt Grace's presence in the house after we moved in. And I didn't know if I believed in that or not, but I did believe in my wife. So I was always supportive. One night we were in the kitchen, and she was at one end of the counter and I was at the other. And I felt the iciest cold run up my back, all the way from my heels all the way up to the top of my head, just on my backside. And I was just about to say something when my wife grabbed the counter and said, wow, that's strong. And my wife was getting dizzy. And as things progressed, I started feeling a tingling, almost like an energy, just like I was standing in this cloud of energy. And my wife said it was Grace, and I had the feeling that I was getting together with an old friend that I hadn't seen for a long time. It was a lot of joy there. The odd thing is, my wife was getting the depression feeling that she must have felt when she took her life. But having seen me growing up, I guess here, I had the feeling of joy. And she was with us for a while, and she finally left. And a couple weeks later, I walked into a back bedroom, and I felt it again. So I went to get the digital camera. And it was in the kitchen. When I got to the hallway leading to the bedroom, she was there to meet me. And again, it was just almost overpowering, just the feeling of the electricity and a little bit of dizziness.
Did you capture it on digital?
Well, I started to take some pictures, and after about the third picture, this was a digital camera I'd bought from Walmart for $100.
Yeah.
And it froze up on me.
Ah.
I looked at it, and all the lights on top were on. The lens was still popped out. I couldn't get it to turn off. I couldn't get it to take a picture. I finally had to take the batteries out just to get it to turn off.
Let me ask you something, Ted, as we listen to Dave's story. Do these apparitions have the capability to shut down digital cameras, tape recorders, and electronics and things like that?
We believe that with all the stories and people that have collected over the years, that yes, that they do have some type of ability to do that. Again, you know, this is speculation. This is their best, you know, hypothesis on this stuff. We can't prove it. But yes, they believe that they can. There's an area in this place that I've been investigating on the land itself that it seems like when people take cameras out there to take photos, they're not allowed to take photos. They shut the camera down. So I do believe that there's something there. And I was going to say with him, with the electricity and the hair standing up on your neck and stuff like that, it's not uncommon from what we gather with evidence that a place where someone has taken their own life, that it said that their spirit still roams and is still there. And if your wife is a sensitive in any way, shape, or form, she's getting that from that person.
And lots of energy as well. We're going to come back and take final phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Ted Vanson with us as we talk about his work, Flashlight Recorder and Comfortable Shoes. It's his simple way of setting up a way to investigate the paranormal without having to spend an arm and a leg to do it. But you will admit, Ted, that some of the equipment these days is pretty good, huh?
Oh, I'll tell you that. Do I believe that they work? I don't know. I know that there's a lot of things out there that these pieces of equipment or gadgets pick up. We're actually working on doing some experiments with some of this equipment ourselves to see what it actually is picking up. And quick, George, I just have to say thanks to Keith Spratley, who is the co-author on the book with me. He's worked for the Department of Defense in the UK. He's a fantastic author. He's got several books out, too, and just wanted to give him a little credit there.
Okay, great. Let's take some final calls here for you. We'll go to Dallas, Virginia, West Virginia. Herc's with us. Hey, Herc, welcome back.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, it's the third time I've called and the third time I've been on the air.
Perfect.
Yeah, I like the way Ted confronts the subject of skeptic, you know, not someone trying to prove something he already believes.
That's right.
But I was wondering earlier, he said that he witnessed the shadow phenomenon while he was watching a monitor. I was wondering if he had any theories on why that wasn't recorded on that unit.
Okay.
Have you ever thought about putting a separate recording device on the monitors themselves? And as always, I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Herc, thank you. Go ahead. Want to elaborate on that, Ted?
Yeah, well, again, I would like to come up with another device. I'm going to try something. You know, it's experimentation. It's something that we have to do. And every time that we think we catch something, we have to go back and review it and see why it's happening or so on and so forth. So we have to come up with new techniques. So with what he said, yes, I would like to put something else out there to try and figure out why it didn't record it. And I don't know what it was. All I can tell you as in this moment, it was a shadow, and that's all I know. We can theorize on it.
Did it look like a shadow of a person?
Yeah, it actually did look like a person, but with four arms, which was the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
A shadow person.
Yeah.
Could be.
So it was strange.
Well, even though you approach things as a skeptic, what have you believed in at this point?
Well,
if anything,
right now, I'm telling you that well, I've got EVPs and stuff, and I've got some stuff that I can't explain. So with investigating, you take that stuff that you can't explain, you put aside, and that's, you know, sort of like your X-Files. And, you know, it's the stuff that you keep reviewing over and over and over to figure out what it is. And that's what I believe in, the stuff that is left over, I guess, because I haven't been able to prove or disprove it. So if I've seen it with my own eyes or heard it with my own ears, it's there.
Yeah.
I caught it. So I have to believe it's there. You know, so now it's just trying to break it down some more and eventually come back to it and say, hey, what is this? I mean, that's why with being a paranormal investigator, we're looking for those little pieces. Hopefully that little piece might be able to give me some answers to what I have in my little X-Files pile.
Hopefully. Hopefully, indeed. Okay, we had Herc calling. Now we have Huck calling, truck driving in New Mexico. Huck, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's been a little while.
Thank you. Good to have you back.
My episode started about 2003. We bought our house, small little town in Wisconsin. And I know at least six spirits that are in the house.
Six?
Yes, wow. My mother and my grandmother being two of them. My house has been profiled on Paranormal Survivor. The episode is titled Evil Intentions.
Evil Intentions, ooh.
Yep. And they left a lot of stuff out. Everything is factual, kind of Hollywooded, but they left a lot of stuff out. And your guest, I forget his name. I'm
Ted.
Really sorry.
Just call him Ted.
Ted, I would love to be able to email you and discuss our experiences.
Sure. Sure. I can give you an email if you got a pen.
Well, can they grab it? Can they grab it off your website?
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Perfect. Okay. Which is linked up at coasttocoastam.com.
One of the little things that happened when my son was up three or four, he would complain about somebody sitting on his bed, and he called him Mr. Radar, like radar gun.
Right.
And through my investigation team, which was Wisconsin, Illinois Paranormal Investigation Team, WIPIT for short, they did the land study, the background history on the property,
right.
And the original owner was Mr. Reader. Like a book reader.
Wow. Close.
Yeah. How old was your child?
Say that again.
How old was your child?
Three and four at that time. He's 12 now.
Yeah, so that's a common mistake. Yeah, he could have been. Yeah, so that's close. It's very cool.
Tell me about these little kids. Do they generally tap into the paranormal and they don't even know it, do they?
Yeah, it seems like children as well as some animals appear to be able to see these things and react to them, where adults, we can't. We're still trying to figure that out. There are some theories that it's because they're, like with the children, they're not spoiled by all the stuff of today. They're still pure. That's why they see it. Animals, we're not sure. But there's also other theories that it's a psychic connection.
Yet a lot of parents will try to persuade and dissuade their child from recognizing what this is.
Right, right.
What would you
parents
recommend?
Parents don't want to know. So parents don't want to know.
They don't want to know. They think really there's something wrong with the kid, don't they?
Right, they do. That's something that's always held us as in paranormal investigators back, is when you, it's kind of like when something miraculous is happening, people automatically want to snuff it out because they're afraid of it. And when they do that, it leaves us with nothing. You know, there's no way to move forward on it. And it's kind of sad in some reality, but I understand why the parents do it.
Let's go next to Fair Oaks, California. Sean's with us on the Wild Card Line. Sean, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I lived up in Truckee at Donner Lake. This must have been 2005, and I had my girlfriend over, and we got in a kind of a heated discussion. Both of us went to other sides of the it was a small place, and the radio turned up, and it happened twice in that night, and then that calmed us down, and we kind of got freaked out about that. And
well, somebody was telling you not to argue.
Exactly, yeah. And I had a couple of instances in that place. I had brought in a old louder I found outside, and just stuff started happening. I don't know if it's related to that, but, a couple things happened in that place that were a little different.
Did it scare you at all?
Yeah, you know, it kind of made me chuckle in a sense to think that, oh, somebody told us to kind of like cool it. We're you know, we weren't like...
You're waking the dead, man. You're waking the dead. They want it quiet.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing, Ted?
I can't tell you either way, but I know that when emotions are high, whether you're arguing or even sometimes laughing or, you know, things seem to rise up. We found that in a lot of different locations. Emotions, human emotions, tend to kind of flare these things. And it's a part of the energy. It's part of emotion that we just don't understand. There's a lot of this stuff out there we don't understand. And like I said before, we probably never will.
Will science even get us answers to stuff like this?
Science, unless we can use their theory, they put us in pseudoscience where we're never going to be able to do it scientifically that way. In fact, in most science, they believe that ghosts don't exist, but yet they don't have rational or even, you know, ideas of why this stuff is happening.
Right.
They're kind of in a corner just like we are with this stuff. You can't have a million people saying that they have ghosts in their house and this stuff is happening and ignore it. You know, and if science can't come up with an answer and we can't come up with an answer, then what is it?
Let's go to Sacramento, California. Gary's with us now. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George and Ted.
Hello there.
I sound like, or Ted sounds like my kinfolk in that he's hungry for learning new things.
He sure is.
He's a skeptic, and he's into taking tiny bits of clues and putting them in and putting them together and finding out what's really going on. I, too, am like that. My credentials, I'm a retired master sergeant from an Air Force organization whose job was to take the tiniest little clues as to what other countries in the world were doing nuclear weapon-wise. Hello?
Yeah, you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
So I love that kind of stuff. So let me address, if I could, a couple phenomena I heard mentioned tonight. One is the supernatural recordings. Part of my job at one time in this in the Air Force was to run a videotape studio back in the days of actual videotape, VHS tape, and I would have to take recordings of seminars and conferences and then put them together and condense them down into an hour-long synopsis or whatever that other people could listen to. And part of that job was hours of sitting at a console playing tapes forward in normal speed, normal voices, and then when I found the part I wanted, I would find the end pieces, and I would just crank the dial on the recorder back or the player back, and zoom back to the beginning, and so I could get the piece I wanted. And what I found over a few years' time was every so often I'd be sitting there and I'd just be whipping it backwards, and all of a sudden, in a room where I'm all by myself, I'd hear a few words spoken, and it was actually very startling. And until I found out that what it was is when you take normal voices or normal noises and you play them forwards, that they sound like they sound like. But when you play them backwards, if you get the right combination of a few normal words sequenced together, when you play them backwards, they can also sound like normal words.
Yeah. Weird, though.
Well, the thing is, I think that explains why the EVP noises or the recordings, it explains how they happen, because when you play things backwards, sometimes you're gonna string two or three things together.
Well, that's true. We call it reverse speech, and we've done that. David Oates has done that quite well, where you hear actual phrases from reverse speech. It's strange, isn't it, Ted?
It's very strange, but what I want to add to this is that I've got and I've heard EVPs where two people are having a conversation and then third voice comes in over top of them.
Wow.
And it's gibberish, but yet when you play it backwards, it's English. So still, where does it come from?
So if you were a betting man, would you say that the other side does exist?
I would say yes. I would say that there's something else out there.
There's something there. And it could be natural, right? It could be another dimension or something like that. Who knows?
Well, I don't know how far in the dimension theory I would go, but, it's kind of like UFOs and aliens. I'd be stupid and very arrogant to think that there's nothing else out there. I'm just trying to get evidence. That's all I'm trying to do, trying to help people, help myself, and get some answers.
Let's go to Anne Marie in Toledo, Illinois now, east of the Rockies. Hey, Anne Marie, go ahead.
I thank you very much for taking my phone call.
Sure thing.
And I hope your day for Valentine's was very nice, both of you.
Well, considering
I have enjoyed this program so very much. I called once before and told you about a dream that I had in the lake house that is haunted. Do you remember that?
I remember that. I think we had Rosemary Ellen Guiley on at that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, my son and my mother and myself, we had a very, very close, loving relationship. We lost her when my son was in the eighth grade. When he graduated from high school, they have this lockdown where the kids can go to their school gymnasium, and they're locked in. Nobody can leave unless they, they can leave. But if they do leave, they can't come back in. Anyway, he was at the lockdown, and his dad and I had volunteered to do some, work there with them, their food, their games, and so forth. And I had to leave early because I was going to go to church the next morning to play the music. And I told my son that I'd have to leave by 3:00 so I could, get some sleep. I left and I came home, got ready for bed, and he and his girlfriend were going to sleep in separate bedrooms, my son in my parents' room, and his girlfriend in my room, and I was going to sleep in the den where my mother used to read all the time.
I want you to hold it right there, Anne Marie, because you're going to finish this up on Open Lines this Friday night What a night. Ted, thanks for being on the program as well. The book is called Flashlight Recorder and Comfortable Shoes. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.